This podcast was recorded Thursday, August 30th at 12:30 p.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like Steve might have to give investigators records and thumb drives from his office here at WOSU.
Well, Mike, I hope they like pictures of toddlers and dusty old news scripts. Let's talk politics.
This is Snollygoster, WOSU's weekly political podcast that follows all those Snollygosters crafting laws in the statehouse. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown. This week we'll learn more about Issue 1, the only statewide ballot measure in the November election, and a proposal that Ohio's top judge calls a hidden disaster.
We'll also get an update on the 12th Congressional District special election more than 2 weeks later. We have a winner.
But first, we learned more this week about what federal investigators were going after in Cliff Rosenberger's statehouse office. A search warrant and subpoena unveiled this week to statehouse reporters basically solidifies everything that we assumed.
The Ohio House gave the FBI three boxes of records and a thumb drive from Rosenberger's office. That visit to the House came one day after the FBI raided Rosenberger's Southwest Ohio home and a storage locker.
We also heard this week more about what exactly investigators were looking for. Agents wanted evidence related to Rosenberger, a payday lending company employee, and two industry lobbyists. They were looking for evidence of extortion, conspiracy to commit extortion, and bribery under the Federal Travel Act. Some very serious allegations there, Mike. Some very serious words.
Those are some scary words, but this is just the warrant saying they were looking for evidence of these possible crimes. It's really nothing new as far as the investigation. We don't know if they found any evidence, but that was the suspicion that federal agents had.
We do have a list of things that they did find, right?
Yes, it's a pretty, you know, Cliff Rosenberger liked to collect memorabilia. He's a self-described political junkie. He loves political memorabilia. There were all kinds of bobbleheads of presidents, all Republican office holders.
No, shocking.
Not one Democrat. Not even one Democrat. Not like a Harry Truman, you know, a conservative Democrat, but all Republicans. There was a lot of football memorabilia, some signed helmets or jerseys. Jim Tressel had a football from Jim Tressel.
None
there.
From Terrell Pryor?
No, Tressel is as close as they got to Tattoo Gate. Tressel's also, don't forget, the president of Youngstown State University.
He is.
So he's a, you know, dual role there. Urban Meyer. The piece de resistance is a painting. First obtained by the blog Third Rail Politics, which has been a thorn in the side of Cliff Rosenberger. But this painting was hung in the lobby of Rosenberger's office, and it's Republican presidents, former presidents, many of them dead presidents, playing cards. So looking at the picture, it has around the table, either seated or standing, Dwight Eisenhower, George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Abraham Lincoln, who was apparently telling the joke that has all of these GOP presidents in stitches. He's at the head of the table. Next to him is Gerald Ford. Then next to him is Richard Nixon. Then Teddy Roosevelt, who's having a grand old time. And right behind Teddy Roosevelt is Cliff Rosenberger.
Do you think of Cliff Rosenberger when you think of Teddy Roosevelt?
It's like the old Sesame Street gag, which one of the things doesn't belong with the others?
It's Cliff Rosenberger.
I mean, he's Republican and he's a leader, but anyway, apparently the art is a painting, but I think Andy Thomas painted the original painting called Grand Old Gang, and somebody painted Cliff Rosenberger into it without Andy Thomas's permission, according to Cleveland.com.
God bless them for doing that, because this is very entertaining. If I had to describe it, it looks a lot like the dogs playing poker picture.
It's exactly what it looks like.
It's dogs playing poker, but it's presidents instead of the dogs, and then someone painted Cliff Rosenberger's head on there. I don't know if did they paint over anyone else, or did they add Rosenberger?
The original picture doesn't have anybody standing behind Teddy Roosevelt and Richard Nixon. It's just he is there. So I assume the artist the artist did one for Democrats a while back. Same thing. And then he redid it to add in Barack Obama. He moved Jack Kennedy around a bit and put Barack Obama
in. At least he's a president.
Yeah. So I think that empty spot, you know, they were going to leave it open for the next Republican president. Cliff Rosenberger is in Donald Trump's spot. Let's face it. He's in Donald Trump's spot in this painting.
That's pretty great. I didn't know Cliff Rosenberger was also fond of members-only jackets.
Well, this is a leather fighter jacket, I believe.
It's a bad jacket.
You don't have your 1940s
style. I'm really happy that picture exists. It exists. But this, getting back to the seriousness of this issue, we have no new idea about the timeline, no idea of what exactly charges prosecutors are pursuing, if any. It's just, again, just this is what we went in looking for.
Yes, this is confirmation of what we suspected. They're linking him to the payday lending industry. That's what the investigation is doing. There's nothing here. Rosenberger's lawyer says there's nothing new here. He says that Rosenberger has done nothing wrong. There's no proof that he's done anything wrong. This is just an investigation and allegations. And in many cases, these investigations go nowhere. They can't find evidence of any wrongdoing, and they go nowhere. So maybe no wrongdoing occurred. But the bill did languish there for a long time as he was taking trips with payday lending lobbyists.
And then maybe it might have been PR that it flew through the legislature right after he resigned. And again, that might have been them trying to kill any public perception of a corrupt House. But it certainly was aided by his resignation, that's for sure.
But my guess is this painting is going to get a lot more exposure in the coming weeks.
God willing.
In negative ads.
It is getting a little old at this point, but we should mention that we do have a winner in the 12th Congressional District special election.
As expected, absentee and provisional ballots did not change much, and Republican Troy Balderson held on to his slim lead, ended up beating Danny O'Connor by nearly 1,700 votes. That's a margin of victory of 0.8%. That's too big to automatically trigger a recount.
The Democratic O'Connor conceded right after those results were certified, and unsurprisingly, he was staying positive about his November rematch with Balderson.
Having students at Ohio State in Denison, Ohio Wesleyan, Otterbein, Zane State, all the branch campuses across the campus, that's going to be an advantage for us, so we're going to be having that conversation.
O'Connor there might be looking a little bit through blue-tinted glasses, but certainly the college vote would aid his chances in November.
He has a point. If you look at the gerrymandered map of this district, his district ends on High Street. It ends on the east side of High Street. So any
college, where all the students live.
Where all the students who are living on campus are not in his district. But the students who are living across High Street in the basically private housing, the apartment buildings, the houses, on the east side of High Street, they are in the 12th district. So any of those students, if they register and if they're eligible, can vote in this election. So he's obviously the Democrats, and he are going to target those folks. And he's right. The other schools, Otterbein, those students can also vote in this election.
O'Connor very optimistic there about Democratic turnout increasing once college students are back on the OSU campus, back at Denison and such. Republican turnout probably bigger in November as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the overall turnout, I forget the number, was around
37%.
Yeah, 35% or so, which is high for a special, especially in August. But traditionally, midterm elections get around 40% or so. So there's some extra points out there, extra votes out there. It comes down, we say it over and over again, it comes down to turnout. Which voters turn out? Are Republicans inspired to turn out? Does Donald Trump get the vote out? Do Democrats who are inspired actually come out and vote? That's what it'll come down to.
As we said, voters get to decide between the two again in November. The only statewide issue going before voters in that election got an official title this week.
Yes, it's a really exciting title. You ready for this? To reduce penalties for crimes of obtaining, possessing, and using illegal drugs.
That might sound a little dry and boring, but it would make some big changes to Ohio sentencing laws. Issue 1 would reclassify low-level felony charges for possession of any drug, including the deadly painkiller fentanyl and also heroin, to misdemeanors carrying zero jail time.
It's something prison reform advocates say is long overdue to keep nonviolent offenders out of prison. Critics, they don't like it so much.
No, it's not at all. This week, Ohio's top judge, Supreme Court Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor, called Issue 1 a hidden disaster. In a letter written on Supreme Court letterhead, she wrote about the explosion in overdose deaths attributed to fentanyl and why drug dealers need to go to prison. She also said Issue 1 would devastate Ohio's drug courts by taking jail time off the table for offenders.
Our old friend Matt Borges, former head of the Ohio Republican Party, is speaking for supporters of Issue 1. He says the title is accurate, but they have a lot of work to do because it only focuses on reduced penalties and not increased funding for treatment.
it's up to our campaign to deliver the message effectively, and we'll either do that or we won't. I never underestimate Ohio voters' intelligence, and we'll make sure that they understand what they're voting for.
They seem like they have a tough road ahead of them. I don't know where the polling stands on this. It seems like a popular idea, but the headline, I think the title does hurt their case.
Yeah, let's look at the two titles. This is the title that supporters of Issue 1 used when they were gathering petitions to get on the ballot. The title of this effort under the petition effort was called the Neighborhood Safety Drug Treatment and Rehabilitation Amendment. No mention of penalties being reduced in that title. The title approved by the Secretary of State's office is to reduce penalties for crimes of obtaining, possessing, and using illegal drugs. It's really important because most people don't pay attention to this stuff.
Right.
They get in there. They want to vote for Richard Cordray. They want to vote for Mike DeWine. They're only going to read the title. This title says to reduce penalties for crimes. Ooh, I don't want to do that.
It's soft on crime. It's soft.
That's the title. So, but the other title, the Neighborhood Safety Drug Treatment and Rehabilitation Amendment, that goes too far the other way. So, how do you balance that? There's never an easy answer. I think they try to make it as succinct and easily understandable as possible. But there's politics involved there. And Matt Borges is right that they have to sell the voters. And frankly, Matt Borges probably doesn't want to criticize John Husted, the Secretary of State's office, being a fellow Republican. So he's just going to, he's right. They've got to get their word out there. They've got to tell people what it is. But if people are not paying attention, that's a tough hurdle to overcome. If you support Issue 1.
For being a Republican, Matt Borges does do a lot of social justice causes.
Yes, he did that. Matt Borges was
the Drug Price Relief Act.
Yes, he was in favor of that.
He was the populist then.
Yes.
And he's the populist now as far as neighborhood safety is what he wanted to call
it. Yeah, he's being consistent.
No, it is. I will admit, it's kind of strange that they gathered all these signatures under the auspices of neighborhood safety. That's what their petition effort said. And then, not at the last minute, but kind of late in the game, John Husted says, okay, this is what it's called.
Well, the reason is, you could say, a cynic would say that John Husted wants it to fail, so we pick the negative title.
Right. Well, whatever the reason, it's very strange that petition signatures that are required to get this on the ballot are collected under the auspices of neighborhood safety, and then people vote on it under the auspices of reduced crime penalties.
Politics. Politics, politics, politics.
Let's turn now to our weekly segment, John Kasich GPS.
Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck.
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
We went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
I think I've eaten my way across the entire state of New York.
Ground control.
This is the segment where we follow our outgoing governor to see if we can tell exactly what he plans to do next.
He was very active on Twitter this week, mostly congratulating his administration for work in fixing the Buckeye Lake Dam, balancing the state budget. Even though that's required by state law, balancing the budget it is, Buckeye Lake Dam was not required by state law. And for what John Kasich, as he put it, Ohio's wages are growing faster than the nation.
Kasich did take a moment to note the passing of John McCain. The Republican senator died last weekend after a battle with brain cancer. Kasich on Twitter called him an iconic American hero, patriot, and a statesman without compare. He ended his tweet by saying, "I will miss my old friend."
Absolutely. Hear, hear. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We're always looking for new listeners, so please tell your friends about us. Give us a good review. Help us get the word out.
Please do. Help us get the word out. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.